I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. This summer, revenues from Maryland's five casinos neared the $100 million per month mark. That's a milestone that state officials say is significant because it signals that the casinos have taken root here. All this takes place as workers in Prince George's County ready a new $1.3 billion MGM casino to open next year. And David Cordish has won approval for a $150 million expansion to his Maryland Live Casino in Arundel Mills. Today on Midday, an update on gambling in Maryland and neighboring states with Gordon Modenica. He's head of the state lottery and gambling commissioner. And James Carmel, an expert on gambling throughout the Mid-Atlantic. That's coming up in this hour of Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday. Dan Rodericks here again. Thanks for joining us. It's a two-hour show, as usual, 12 to 2 here on WYPR. And the second hour of our show today, Midday on Culture, with Sherry Parks. Sherry is back. We're going to talk about Pope Francis and football. It's going to be very interesting. You know, Pope Francis was here this past week, and he comes to a country where polls have indicated, and we did a two-hour show on this, that more and more Americans have moved away from Christianity in favor of atheism, agnosticism, and even some other religions. And yet Francis appeared to stir awake, at least some sense of spirituality among Americans who seemed captivated by his presence and his words. And that prompted Sherry to want to share some thoughts with us today about how this increasingly secular society of ours identifies and practices its values when the Pope's not around. And she has a few words to share with regard to sports in general and football in particular in the second hour of our show today, Sherry Parks on American Culture. In this first hour of the show, we turn our attention to gambling. Maryland's first casino, the Hollywood Casino up in Perryville, opened September 17th, 2010. It's already been 5 years. Since then, four other casinos have opened: the casino at Ocean Downs, the Rocky Gap Casino Resort in Western Maryland, the Maryland Live Casino, of course, at Arundel Mills, and the Horseshoe Casino, which opened in August last year in Baltimore. And since then, revenues have steadily increased. Last year, Maryland's five casinos raked in more than $1 billion, and they had a big summer that we'll be telling you about in this hour of the show. A sixth casino, the $1.3 billion MGM Casino down at National Harbor, along the Potomac River, which is under construction down there in Prince George's County. That's supposed to come online in the middle of next year, I believe. David Cordish, the developer, recently got a nod from the Anne Arundel County Council to start a expansion of the Maryland Live Casino at Arundel Mills. And so today on the show, a survey of one of the most concentrated gambling markets in the country. We're happy to have on the show Gordon Modenica, director of the State Lottery and Gaming Control Agency. He was appointed to head the agency in May by Governor Larry Hogan. So we welcome him to Midday for the first time. It's nice to meet you, Gordon.
Thanks. Nice to be here, Dan.
Gordon Modenica comes to us from New York State, right? You ran the lottery there for 5 years.
New York and New Jersey, where I was also involved for setting up a marketing and sales operation for the lottery there.
You've been involved in legalized gambling for how many years then?
It's going on 8 years now. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What did you do before that?
Well, the bulk of my career was in the newspaper business with the New York Times Company.
Oh, really?
And headed up strategic planning there and was very involved in a lot of the M&A work that the Times Company was doing at the time.
Huh.
And most recently was part of the team that bought the Philadelphia Inquirer and Daily News before the industry collapsed in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I think they've gone through two bankruptcies.
Yeah, and another ownership group, right?
Two more. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have you on the show today. There's a lot to talk about, lots of questions. And I'll tell our listeners here, if you have any questions about gambling in Maryland, about the casinos, Gordon Modenica is the man to ask. 410-662-8780 for live talk here on Midday. Also, I'd like to hear from people who've been to the casinos and compared them. That would be especially interesting, I think, if you've been to the Horseshoe, if you've been to Maryland Live, or if you've gone to Rocky Gap, wherever, Hollywood Casino up in Perryville. We'd like to get your impressions, your experiences. Please share them with us during this hour of the show, 410-662-8780. And also, our email address is midday@wypr.org. We're on Twitter at @MiddayWYPR. A little bit later on, James Carmel will be back on the show. He's joined us before. He's an expert on gambling in the Mid-Atlantic, and we'll take a look at what's going on in other states. So let's talk about this state first, and we'll focus on casinos before we get to...
Sure.
We might get to the lottery at some point in this hour, but there's a lot to talk about with regard to casinos. I show here five casinos totaling $96.7 million in revenue in August,
yep,
approaching $100 million in 1 month, and that's considered an important benchmark.
Well, it's a good number to hit. I think the results from the five casinos are probably going to stabilize a little bit now. We still expect to see some growth this year. Obviously, we'll start seeing our first year-over-year numbers from Horseshoe because they've just passed their first anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you're going to see seasonal impacts, certainly from Ocean Downs and from Rocky Gap. So they've probably just been through their peak seasons, and we expect that to probably go down a bit. So you're going to continue to see some ups and downs, but I think overall – the casino business will continue to grow even before MGM comes on. And then when MGM comes on, I think you're going to see a whole new level of growth, probably similar to what we've seen in the last year or two, major double digit, in the 10-20% range.
Why don't we go over and talk a little bit about each casino?
Sure.
And then we'll start on the outskirts and come into Baltimore, where it's really concentrated.
Yep.
Here. So you mentioned Ocean Downs and Rocky Gap.
Yep.
What would you say about the casino at Ocean Downs, for instance, and then Rocky Gap?
You know, they're both wonderful smaller casinos. I mean, they are significantly smaller than some of the big ones. And they appeal to people who are coming into those resort areas to enjoy all kinds of other activities. And I think casino play, for the most part, is just another entertainment option for people. And you go to a casino, you might have a nice meal, you'll do some gaming. Some people like slots, some people like table games. Ocean Downs doesn't have live table games yet. They've got electronic table games. It's just another wonderful way to spend an evening.
Are they profitable?
Absolutely, yeah.
And how are things at Rocky Gap, which has been a bit rocky?
You know, Rocky Gap is actually one of our great success stories. And they were recently acquired by a new company out of Nevada. And
it seemed like they had a slow build.
They did. And I think it was, originally it was a state-owned facility out there that I think had been on some hard times. And now it's a beautiful facility. And I think they've right-sized it to its marketplace. And they've found their niche. And they're doing well.
And Rocky Gap is profitable as well.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay, then we come here. The thing that's interesting about our region, well, I don't want to skip over Perryville. Hollywood Casino, that was the first one to open, and it did well for a while. And
yep.
Then my impression was that the other competition started to get to it.
Well, that's the fact of life in the casino business. It's all a very competitive marketplace, especially in the Northeast. And now what you're seeing really is what I would characterize as market share shifts. So when Perryville first opened, they didn't have the market to themselves by all means. But certainly since they've opened, and that was 5 years ago, you've seen a lot of other new competitors opening up since then. And it's managed to whittle away at some of their customer base. But again, I think they found their marketplace among their local customers, and they're doing well. And again, some of that required some downsizing and some right-sizing. And now they seem to have found their right level. And I was just there for their fifth anniversary on Friday night. And everyone, seems to be having a really good time. It's a nice place to go.
One of the things I'm curious about is that attracts people off the highway. Does anyone measure that? The number of drivers out of 95 who just see a sign and say, there's a casino. Hey, well, we got to stop anyway. So let's stop here. I'm just curious.
It's funny because when you pull off the highway, there isn't actually a big sign. It's a little confusing, and they've just gotten approval from the local
Isn't
authorities.
Isn't there a sign on the highway?
On the highway itself,
yeah.
There's a road sign. But once you pull off, it isn't as obvious, but they've just gotten approval for erecting a very large sign at the exit ramp that's going to steer people right to the casino.
Oh, maybe they've been losing business because people get off and say, well, there's a McDonald's, but where's the—and it's sort of a bland-looking casino.
Well, it's not a heavily populated area.
Yeah, and the casino itself is not adorned with lots of glitz, like the downtown horseshoe.
I think it's not an urban casino.
Right.
It's more of a suburban rural casino.
Yeah.
But I think it's got a very attractive facade and parking lot, and very welcoming
to people who come to the casino. Okay. And it's profitable now.
Absolutely. Yep.
Okay. So here, the question we were looking at when the Hollywood Casino opened a year ago was 11 miles away is the very successful. Horseshoe Casino in downtown Baltimore.
Yeah.
11 miles away is the very successful Maryland Live, owned by David Cordish.
Yep.
And we were wondering what's going to happen here. Is this market going to become saturated? Is Horseshoe going to put on a major competition,
uh-huh.
draw away from Maryland Live? And we see Maryland Live doing very well, and actually Hollywood underperforming based on its projections for the first year.
Yeah, I think, projections are always tough. In fact, I'm not sure I've ever seen projections that really worked out well. I think we're happy with the performance of Horseshoe.
It's about $23 million a month or so, something like that.
Yeah, and I think but back to the point about competition, it's a fact of life in the casino business. These are, competitive businesses that are trying to take customers from each other. And I think to some extent, even the way the revenue is split in Maryland is reflective of, sort of anticipating that there's going to be competitive impacts. And when MGM comes on, there's some changes to the revenue splits once again that hope to compensate for that loss of market share to the new players.
Mm-hmm.
I think people knew all along that these will be competing entities.
The thing I wondered about all along, and it was before you got to Maryland, Gordon Medenica, it was 11 miles away. Does it make sense to have these casinos so close? But Cordish got in first.
Yep.
And established there outside of Baltimore City, south of Baltimore. To me, it just didn't look right having casinos 11 miles apart.
They're both, fairly large. Unlike Rocky Gap and Ocean Down, these are both, substantial casinos, and they're doing just fine, even 11 miles apart. So obviously, there are limits to how much competition you can put in the same place. You can go to the extreme of a gambling mecca like Las Vegas, where casinos are right on top of one another, and they still have to compete with one another. And I think Maryland has found the right balance in terms of the number of casinos that will then generate the most revenue for all the good causes that they support.
Well, when MGM comes online down at National Harbor,
what if
people in this industry expect is going to happen to the other casinos? I mean, is that going to draw away from Maryland Live, or is this going to draw more people from North Carolina, Virginia? What's it going to do?
I think MGM's primary market is going to be Virginia and D.C. And I think even in their own statements, they're talking about 55% of their customers coming from those places.
And those people are not presently coming up to Arundel Mills?
Oh, they might
Mills
be. No, I think you'll see some market share erosion. I think Maryland Live, and I think part of the reason why they're adding the new hotel development next door is they're anticipating competition from MGM, and they want to have all the same amenities that MGM will have. And therefore, they need to compete. And again, I think everyone has their eyes open, knows that it'll be a competitive market. And I would guess that Maryland Live, and to a smaller extent, Horseshoe, will lose some market share to MGM. But in terms of the total state revenues, I think they'll be going up dramatically.
I want to talk about state revenues and where all this money is going, at least the state's share of it. And a note there, $150 million expansion of the Maryland Live Casino Complex at Arundel Mills by David Cordish. That includes that hotel that Gordon Medenica was just referring to. In fact,
it's not an expansion of the gaming floor at all. It's just the hotel addition.
It's an adjacent, really. I said an expansion of the complex there.
Yeah.
Let's take a couple calls. Marie in White Marsh, because we asked folks for their impression of the casinos, especially if you can compare them for us. Marie, how are you?
Hi. I'm great. Thank you.
Well,
I have been to all the casinos, and it seems like I used to win a lot more, especially at Live and Hollywood. And it seems like the slots are so tight anymore. I'm just wondering if Cordish was trying to save up for his expansion. It makes me feel like not going because I spend money and I don't win it anymore,
You're not, okay, Maria, I'm having trouble understanding you, but I believe you're saying that you're not. She's just not winning at the slots as much as she used to. Is that?
I don't think there's been any substantial change. You know, we look at the average payout on the casino floors, and they've been pretty stable over really the last couple of years. So, unfortunately, I think that may just be the you know, the roller coaster of random numbers, and you know, sometimes people feel they're doing better than others, but we have not seen a real change in the payout rates of the machines.
What we are seeing is a change in what's on the floor, slots versus table games. We'll talk about that after this break.
Okay.
And Colin, who's calling in from White Marsh, has a good question about where the money is going, the state revenue and local revenue from casinos. So, Colin, stay on the line. We'll get to you after this short break when we come back for our conversation about gambling in Maryland with Gordon Medenica, who is the state's lottery director. And the gaming, it's actually called the State Lottery and Gaming Control Agency. Right. Right?
I got it
right. Okay.
Thanks.
A short break. And you can join us here, especially if you would like to give us your impressions and talk about your experiences in Maryland casinos. 410-662-8780. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Our guest in this hour, Gordon Medenica, is director of the State Lottery and Gaming Control Agency. We're talking about gambling in Maryland. We'd like to hear your comments about your visits to casinos, 410-662-8780. James Carmel, gambling expert on the Mid-Atlantic especially, going to be joining us in just a minute. I want to take Colin's call, though, because he had a question that takes us into another aspect of all this. Hello, Colin.
Hey, Dan and Gordon. How are you guys doing?
Great, hey, thanks.
Yeah, so my question was, when the horseshoe was being built, I heard that some of the money was supposed to trickle into the neighborhoods or the surrounding area with that to try and improve or renovate the surrounding areas. So I'm wondering if any of that money has trickled down somehow, or if those areas have received any of that revenue from the horseshoe.
Yep, and they absolutely have, and it's available on our website in case you want to look at the details. But in a nutshell, the revenue that is generated by the casinos, all the casinos, has a number of statutorily required good causes. The biggest one is the Maryland Education Trust Fund, and about 37% of the money goes there. But local impact grants, about 3.5% of the money goes there, and that added up last year to about $36.5 million. Now, that's in all of the casino markets. I wouldn't be able to tell you exactly how that's distributed at the local level, but again, last year, there's about $36.5 million that went to the local impact grants.
I have just an example here. 1 month, okay? The month we talked about, August 2015, with total revenue at $96.7 million. Now, the casinos got $52 million out of that. But the remainder, the other $44 million, breaks down this way. To the Education Trust Fund, $34.2 million. To small minority and women-owned businesses, which I guess come in the form of grants from the state, $926,000 in the month of August. Horse racing, for the, you know, the subsidy of thoroughbred racing here in Maryland, the purses, $4.8 million. And those local impact grants that Gordon was just talking about for 1 month, August 2015, that's $3.4 million. And then it has operating expense contribution. I'm not sure what that is, but that's $675,000. What do you know what that is, operating
that's
expense?
That's for us administering the program.
For you guys.
And it only really covers a small portion of the cost of administration.
I want to welcome onto the show now James Carmel, who's been with us before. He's a professor at Harford Community College, but spends a lot of time studying the gambling industry in the United States, and particularly in the Mid-Atlantic. Thanks for joining us again, Jamie.
Sure, Dan. Hi.
So I'm getting Gordon Medenica's take on how things look here in Maryland. And I've talked to you before about the concentration. We have one of the most concentrated gambling areas in the country, really. So break this down for me a little bit. How does Horseshoe look after its first year compared to Maryland Live? Is it what you expected in this past year, where Maryland Live really stay competitive, and the Horseshoe sort of underperformed based on its projections?
Yeah, I think. Well, first of all, I think the Horseshoe is at least remaining fairly competitive and doing okay, particularly after the problems of the spring. Mm-hmm. But I think that the projections for the Horseshoe Casino in Baltimore were probably a little bit overstated, and I think the main reason for that was because there was an assumption that maybe too many players going to Maryland Live were going to shift to the Horseshoe in Baltimore. But I think there were a lot of reasons why that was unrealistic, the main one being the problems that a lot of people might have felt going into downtown Baltimore was just easy to get to a suburban casino next to a big mall and a location where Maryland Live is, which is such a good place for such a large amount of people in the Baltimore, Washington area. So I think that even if Horseshoe has been underperforming according to projections, it's not surprising from my point of view that it did.
And that point about city casinos, I'm curious about that. What do we see? Can you talk about that a little bit? What do we see with city casinos generally, those that are situated in downtown areas?
Well, they're gonna draw from the population right around them. So, and in fact, I think Horseshoe has been sustained, especially from maybe some new markets, new players coming into the Baltimore market. But they're perhaps having sets of challenges that you might not see in a suburban environment, particularly parking and traffic, and then the perception of suburban gamblers of what it is to go into downtown city, which might or might not be real,
mm-hmm.
But I think impacts them and makes it maybe harder to establish a base in the region, so that they're going to focus more on the immediate surroundings, which is the city population.
Well, the other end of that would be tourism, right? You have more visitors, people coming to the city for conferences and to visit potentially customers for a city casino.
Yes, and I think that is the case, and that's why they're going to try to partner with downtown hotels and other businesses, perhaps, and run shuttles the way Horseshoe does. And I think with Baltimore, you've had some success in that area, clearly, but that maybe gives them an edge in a way. But also, in the case of the Horseshoe Baltimore, when you talk about tourists and visitors coming into the city, maybe from out of town, going to a convention, or just perhaps visiting the Inner Harbor for a weekend or something, that oftentimes they might have existing player club memberships through Caesars. So they're going to casinos where they might live or around the country and gaining points, bonus points, earning complimentary nights or rooms or maybe gambling money or drinks or something, and then they can use those bonus points at the Horseshoe property. And so that is called cross-marketing. I think it gives a casino like Horseshoe Baltimore an advantage that way and helps them maybe bring in some of that out-of-town traffic.
Hmm. James Cumrell, stay on the line. I want to bring one of our listeners, Samuel, into this conversation because he wanted to make a point about Maryland Live versus Horseshoe, which we asked him to do. Go right ahead, Samuel. Welcome.
Hey, Dan. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller.
Excellent.
I'm 22 years old, young gamer. I like Horseshoe a little bit because of the urban environment, but Maryland Live, I think their marketing and everything is just on point. I've actually won a lot at Maryland Live, too, and I think they just have an upper hand because I used to work at Arundel Mills, and the tourism you get there is just crazy from the airport, the hotels. You might not think because of all the business district, but they get a lot of traffic out there. So I think Maryland Live just has an upper hand because even downtown Baltimore, I'm an Oreo, big Orioles fan. Used to go, me and my girlfriend go to Horseshoe like after games and stuff. And it'd be okay, but it wouldn't be as packed and as pretty much the energy that is at Maryland Live. I think just Horseshoe isn't, I don't think they've captivated that part of people going to their casino yet. And Maryland Live has kind of got a hold on that, especially for me because I don't gamble a lot, but me and my girlfriend have been like, hey, we got to get back out to Live, and we really don't feel that way about Horseshoe.
And, Samuel, you're saying this not just because you've been luckier at Maryland Live, right?
Yeah, it's not just because of that. It's just that I think the atmosphere. Because, it has been the whole fight thing at Horseshoe and just different type of things. It is an urban environment, so you'll attract that crowd in Baltimore. It's basically black folk. I'm a black man myself, so I understand the demographic of everything around that casino, and that's kind of what you're going to attract. It's more like I see Horseshoe as like a night-like thing because of the live band and stuff, but not really as a gaming atmosphere.
Hmm. Well, thank you very much for your observation, Samuel. I appreciate it.
No problem, Dan.
All right, and good luck. Doesn't sound like he needs it, actually. 410-662-8780. Hey, Jamie and Gordon, 22 years old. That's interesting. I didn't ask him this. I meant to. I would assume Samuel's into table games over the slots, which gets us to a trend that we're seeing in the market, right? I'll go to Gordon on this. Some of the casinos have asked to have more table games than slots now, right?
Well, because the initially were launched with only slots, and then when table games were approved, they started shifting the floor makeup toward table games. And very typically in any casino environment, certainly in North America, roughly 70% of the revenue is slots and 30% is table games. So what you're seeing now is really a shift in that floor allocation toward table games, toward what is probably a fairly typical split between slots and tables. So
which would be what now? You said it was 70-30. So
I think that's typical in like the Las Vegas, Atlantic, and big gaming markets. So
mm-hmm.
I think we're getting to that point now. Obviously, table games generate more revenue per seat than a slot does. But overall, it also attracts a different kind of players. The poker rooms are also very popular at the casinos. And
go ahead, Jamie.
Yeah, and I think Gordon's making some good points about the overall distribution of revenue, but also how things have changed a little bit. And I think Samuel didn't tell us whether he played table games or slots, but certainly the demographic, the young men, tend to be more attracted to table games. And in my reading of the numbers, looking at the revenue numbers over the past 3 years or so since table games were legalized in Maryland, is that table games are the big story in Maryland and the big success story. So that in 2012, the legislature did a projection of if we put table games in, how much would we expect to make? And they predicted that in the fiscal year prediction that they came up with for 2015, FY 2015, which would have just ended on June 30th, was about $231 million. But in fact, in FY 2015, the Maryland casinos made $356 million in table games, which is about a 64% increase in over the projected table games revenue. I mean, mm-hmm. there's no question table games have been the big success story. And on when it comes to Maryland Live versus Horseshoe on that, I mean, clearly Horseshoe had a reputation as a brand kind of focusing on table games, Harrah's and Caesars and the World Series of Poker and such, their partnership. So that when Horseshoe was in development, Maryland Live was very focused on making sure that their table games players, their poker players and others, would stay loyal. And I think their marketing program was pretty effective in retaining that particular segment of customer loyalty. So, and it sounds like it's worked fairly well.
Okay, I understand the trend there. But here's an important question. Taxation. When it comes to slots versus table games, there's a difference there, a significant difference, right? Table games, I'm sorry, slot machines in Maryland are taxed anywhere from 51 to 61%, I think.
That's probably gone down now for the casinos that now manage their own floors and pay for their own slot machines.
Okay, but what would you say it is? Is it 50%?
It's in the 40% range.
It's in the 40% range.
Yeah.
Okay, and table games are where? 20-something percent?
20%.
Right.
So if they shift, I mean, you understand my question. If there's the shift to more table games, the legislature, it would seem to me, would want to address that if it hasn't already in Maryland.
Well, it's a policy question.
It's a revenue question. There's a revenue impact.
I think the casinos are managing to their customers. And,
I understand what they're doing.
Because I think some of the press seems to imply that the casinos are managing to chase a lower tax rate.
Okay. And it could be a little of both, no?
And I think they're appealing to their customers.
Okay. Jamie, you want to?
Sure. I think the biggest issue there is the reason why table games are taxed at a much lower rate is because they're much more personnel heavy, labor intensive.
Oh, yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
it's much more costly to hire people because of the numbers of people you need to hire, to run table games operation than it is for a slots operation. So I think, for example, it takes five people just to run one craps table. So that's, I think, the biggest reason. But I think, you know, whether it's 20% or 25% or maybe a little lower in Pennsylvania, that's probably about right. I understand your point, Dan, about the revenue, but I don't think it would be in Maryland's interest to start raising the tax on the table games at this point.
No, it's a good point you make about it, because we're actually employing more people than a machine is, right?
Yeah, a lot more.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jamie. Let's take another call while Jamie Carmel is with us. Tracy in Baltimore, welcome to Midday. Hi.
Hi. So interesting conversation. I just wanted to add, at least from my experience, to his, you know, I'm not a huge gambler, but I've played in Atlantic City, to Vegas, to St. Louis. And the one thing I've noticed about both Horseshoe and Maryland Live is these very high table minimums that they have, where, I mean, on an evening, you're talking, there's not a single table in Horseshoe for less than $25 a hand if you're playing blackjack.
They don't have a $5 table?
Oh, no.
That's
well,
gone.
I mean, even if you're in Vegas.
Shows you when the last time I was there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, even if you're in Vegas on a Friday, Saturday night, you can't find a $5 table, but you can find a $15 table. But, I mean, I've talked to some of the people that work there. Part of it initially was, I think, a way to kind of try and keep out undesirable, kind of lower-end gambler. But what blows me away is when you go into these casinos, every seat is taken at $25 a hand, which I just left because I'm not playing $25 a hand. So I don't play here, but it's very interesting, and I think that's why when they talked about this as slots only and then it got into table games, that's one of the reasons that the profit margin is so high there and they want more tables because people are playing them at those really high minimums.
Interesting. Tracy, does that mean you don't even bother to go anymore?
Yeah, I mean, mostly if I'm here, I'm playing slots, which I don't really do very much. I mean, I'm more of a blackjack person, but, I mean, craps at $25 a roll, you just would be shocked at how full it is. And so they're loving it.
That's a little rich for my blood. I was going to ask you, Tracy, if you wanted to go shoot some craps with me, is there a $5 table? I guess not. All right.
Yeah, I bet if we went maybe during today, like during, I haven't gone during the day to see if it's lower, but I mean, I've been there pretty early, like 6 o'clock, and it's high.
Gordon Medenica, is it lower? Is there a day rate?
It's basically variable pricing according to market demand. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the casinos are very precise on exactly that, you know, figuring out how much to set the table minimums and when to raise them, and they follow that precisely. But what Tracy said was, you know, even at $25 a minimum bet when she's there, they're full tables. Well, that tells you right there that they've strategized correctly.
Hey, Jamie, can you stay on the phone a few more minutes?
Yeah.
We need to take a break. When we come back, I have some more questions for you. And you're welcome to join us, folks, 410-662-8780. Dan Roderick's here with Gordon Medenica, who is the director of the State Lottery and Gaming Control Agency for Maryland. And that's Jamie Carmel, an expert on gambling in the Mid-Atlantic. And when we get back, I want to ask him about the Mid-Atlantic, what's going on in the states around us. If you have a comment or question, if you've been to casinos and want to share your experiences or impressions, 410-662-8780. Bill has a question by email. Do any of the Maryland casinos have an online version that Marylanders are eligible to use? Gordon Medenica.
No, they don't. That's the model that New Jersey has followed, where the casino industry has a fairly vibrant online gaming market, and it's basically slots on your computer screen. Revenue
that makes
there
sense
has
for casinos
been
to be doing that?
Well, it's been fairly modest. I think, their annual revenues are only about $120 million. And again, in New Jersey, the lottery does about $3 billion. So it's a relatively small number to the business.
Because I would think they'd want you on the floor. They want you in the place buying drinks and having dinner. Right?
They're doing a lot of co-marketing. And they view it also as a marketing platform to bring people into the casinos.
Here's some impressions from Rob in Pigtown, not far away from Hollywood. I keep saying Hollywood, the Horseshoe Casino in Baltimore. Please explain the economics behind Yeah, this would be one for Jamie Carmel. Please explain the economics behind the large, big-name restaurants inside the Horseshoe, like Johnny Sanchez, Binion's Steakhouse, and Guy Fieri's. If I owned the Horseshoe, I would plan them as appropriately priced, high-end restaurants that might attract non-gamblers who would in turn drop a few bucks into a slot machine or table game. However, it seems to me they choose to unsuccessfully take advantage of the captive audience already there gambling. In my experience, the food isn't great and is priced 20 to 30% higher than what I can get at other restaurants around town. On the bright side, the Horseshoe has become my go-to for watching Ravens games. The bars are very lightly attended and the drink specials are great. Anyway, I don't know if, Jamie, if you had a comment about the role the restaurants play in attracting. Is that true? They attract the non-gamblers who maybe come in to sort of take a peek at the gambling while they're having dinner at a nice restaurant and then maybe throw some money into the casino?
It's possible. I mean, it's all about marketing from both the restaurant perspective and the casino perspective. Now, I haven't been to any of the restaurants at Horseshoe, so I can't comment on the quality of the food or anything, but they both see an angle. So if Guy Fieri's opens up a restaurant at the Horseshoe Baltimore, you know, he's hoping that he's going to bring in customers who might not have come to his restaurant that would be gambling otherwise. And likewise, Horseshoe Baltimore is also thinking, well, if we can bring in these big-name restaurateurs and have them open up, it can really elevate our own marketing and bring it in. Now, to the extent to which it's exactly working, I'm sure they're analyzing and closely following. Are these restaurants really bringing in more customers, players for the casino? And from the restaurant perspective, are they really benefiting by being in the casino? So,
Jamie, what do you expect to happen when MGM comes online at National Harbor? And when I say what do you expect, I mean, in terms of the casinos we're talking about now, its effect on, say, Maryland Live to the north and then Baltimore.
Sure. Well, I think that is the $64,000 question in Maryland gaming right now. And one thing, you know, following this for a number of years now, Dan, and answering questions related to it, one thing I've discovered and I think found out is gaming projections in this way are much more of an art than a science.
Yeah.
So it's hard to be too precise on that. The state is estimating a 23% decline in Maryland Live revenue when that National Harbor MGM property opens in July, probably sometime next summer, and a 16% decline in Horseshoe. I do think it's going to take a hit. The extent to which it takes a hit is just unclear right now. I'm going to give you a big range, not very satisfying, but, you know, 10 to 30%, something like that.
Hmm.
Certainly there is a segment, a pretty sizable segment of the current Maryland Live market that is going to be probably going to National Harbor, MGM, when that opens up, because it's just going to be easier and closer for them. But we could see a replay of what happened with Maryland Live and Horseshoe Baltimore, which is Maryland Live was pretty effective at maintaining their customers. So even if it might be a 10-minute shorter drive, say, from a place in Anne Arundel County, for example, or maybe somewhere else roughly proximate to D.C. to drive to the new casino, if you're feeling well-treated and you think the games are being played fair and you're relatively successful, you're getting good comps, excellent customer service, then it might not be enough to just make you switch over to the new casino when it opens.
Hmm.
There could be some impact with Horseshoe Baltimore, but I see it as relatively minimal, because I don't think Horseshoe Baltimore is taking a lot of business right now from the greater D.C. market, the D.C. suburbs, Northern Virginia and such, and Washington itself. I think most of that traffic is going to Maryland Live almost entirely where it is. So there could be a small percentage. The state projection is 16% decline in Baltimore Horseshoe revenue when MGM opens. I think that's really too high. I wouldn't be surprised if it's no more than between about 3% and 6% that the Horseshoe business declines.
Gordon Medenica, how do your projections or thoughts on this compare to Jamie's?
I think Jamie is his perspective is really strong, and again, I also very much agree with him that projections are in fact pretty loosey-goosey.
Not a science. Yeah,
and
right.
So yeah, I would think that the market share shifts are going to be certainly at the lower end of those ranges, and probably closer to what Jamie is predicting as well.
Jamie, wasn't that long ago? Politicians in Maryland, others were saying, "You got to get slots. You got to get slots in Maryland. Delaware has slots. Delaware is killing us. Delaware is sucking the life out of Maryland. Maryland's horse industry is going to die. All the horses are dying. The cats are dying. The dogs are dying. You have to have slot machines in Maryland because Delaware is killing us. And they're taking all our retirees, too." Anyway, so how is Delaware doing these days now that we have five casinos online in Maryland?
Hasn't been great. There's no question that Maryland casinos have taken a big chunk of business away from the Delaware racinos, Delaware Park, Dover Downs, and Harrington. Just to give you some perspective, just some this percentage in annual declines. In 2010, let me see, the Delaware racinos were at, they were bringing in about $571 million in 2014. That was $408 million. So, and in fact, Maryland keeps growing, while Delaware has declined and continues to decline, and Pennsylvania also declines, although not as much, not as great a extent. But Maryland kind of, Pennsylvania reached sort of plateau and then has declined a little bit. It's just around a little over $3 billion a year, now in annual revenue. But that's last year was about $3.06 billion. In 2014 and 2012, it was $3.15 billion. So Pennsylvania has also declined a little bit, probably has to do with Maryland, and Maryland keeps going up. And that's the interesting thing that we see with Maryland, where despite sometimes projections of doom whenever a new casino is opened up, Maryland total revenue just keeps going up. So, you know, Maryland is managing to bring in new traffic, new revenue to its casinos, at least. That so far that trend hasn't broken on a year-to-year basis.
Jamie, I think you're spot on, and I've been asked about this in terms of the whole Northeast and saturation in the Northeast, and I think we all agree that the Northeast is very saturated. And what you're seeing is the old sort of concentrations of gaming, particularly in Atlantic City and Connecticut, they're all losing market share to all the other states that are adding casinos. Massachusetts hasn't even come online yet. And yet I've got to believe that Maryland is just very lucky in its geography, sort of being at the southern boundary of that very saturated market. And again, that's why I'm very optimistic about MGM, for example, being able to draw from Virginia primarily. So I think the total gaming revenues in the Northeast continue to rise, small numbers probably, but continue to rise. So the pie is still growing, but with this just tremendous addition of supply, demand hasn't kept up with it. And so you've seen that redistribution of the revenue.
Hey, Jamie, I was curious about Pennsylvania. I'm glad you gave us the numbers from Pennsylvania. The last time I talked to you, I think they were at 14 casinos, headed to 15. Do you know what the number is now in that state?
I don't have the total number, but it hasn't changed a whole lot.
Okay, it's something in the high teens there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for being with us, Jamie. It's always great to get you on the show, and we really appreciate your contribution. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you, Dan. It's always been great to be on your show, and thanks, Gordon, as well.
Thank you, Jamie.
Jamie Carmel, who is a professor at Harford Community College, but an expert in gambling in the Mid-Atlantic and really knows his stuff, has come on the show from time to time to give us his perspective. Alice writes in, she says she's a non-gambler, but she says non-gamblers love the food at casinos. She says, "I have not gone in some time, but as a non-gambler or the occasional penny slot gambler, I have gone to Charlestown, where they have a Hollywood casino," right?
Yes.
Charlestown, which is closest to me, just for the amazing carrot cake they have. While my friends play the slots, I enjoy the food. I do like carrot cake. Can we talk about the Maryland Lottery just for a
Absolutely.
Few minutes? It gets overlooked sometime. And I guess the one thing I've always wondered about is, how does the lottery look now that these casinos have come online?
Yeah. And that was a big question that the legislature had a couple of years ago, because the lottery, in fact, had declining revenues for 2 years in a row until this very past year. And a lot of people sort of rather blithely sort of thought that that was all because of the casinos. And we took a little bit of a look at that. And I think casinos impact lotteries primarily on two games, Keno and Instant Games. And I think we did see a little bit of the hit on our Keno game, which in Maryland is very strong. I think we're in the top three in the country in terms of our Keno results. However, Maryland actually is an underperformer on instant games. Typically, in the lottery industry around the country, 50 to 60% of revenues come from instant games.
The scratch-offs.
Scratch-offs. And in Maryland, it's barely above 30%. So there's a tremendous amount of headroom on the instant game category for the lottery, and certainly where we're putting a lot of emphasis going forward to grow that piece of the business. And so to the extent that casinos impacted us, we might have felt it on Keno. I don't think we felt it on the instant games because we're just not up at that level. And another good example is in Massachusetts, again, which is bringing casinos in hopefully soon. They're very worried about the impact on lottery because the Massachusetts lottery is especially strong on instant games and Keno. So the two types of games where you could expect an impact from similar players would be on that. And that's where Massachusetts is worried. And I suspect their lottery will take a more substantial hit from casinos than we saw here in Maryland.
So how does it look? Like the last fiscal year, how did the lottery revenue look?
Well, we were up again, and all-time record on instants. Again, that's where we have the headroom, and we're seeing that kind of double-digit growth. Keno is stabilized and is growing again. So the lottery's in reasonably good shape, and we think, again, the big opportunity there is on the scratch-off side.
I haven't played in a while. I mean, I haven't even looked at this for a while. We have daily numbers still,
yep,
right?
Absolutely.
Couple
pick
of times
three,
a day,
pick four, twice a day.
I haven't.
And there are two biggest games, actually.
The daily numbers.
Yeah, where the real weakness is on the lottery side is on the multi-state big jackpot games, Powerball and Mega Millions. And of course, we just had a big Powerball jackpot. Unfortunately, got hit last night in Michigan.
Three Rivers, Michigan. Dateline. Lottery officials say the winning ticket to a $310.5 million Powerball jackpot was sold in southwestern Michigan. There's your peer out there. Michigan Lottery spokesman Jeff Holyfield says the winning ticket Wednesday night's drawing was sold at a gas station in Three Rivers, Michigan.
Yep. Single winner.
A single winner for $310 million.
Yep.
Gee whiz. And you said Marylanders don't do very well in this?
We've been suffering along with the whole country. I mean, Maryland is actually a reasonably good performer on those sales, but those games have not been doing well because of this lack of jackpots. And there's this phenomena that people call jackpot fatigue, where, you know, once upon a time, $300 million would have had, you know, lines, two-hour lines in front of every lottery retailer.
It doesn't get people as excited anymore?
It doesn't get people as excited anymore. And so it takes higher and higher jackpots to get people excited. So they're making some changes to the games that hopefully will allow that jackpot to rise ever higher. You remember the all-time record was one here in Maryland, the 656 of a couple
years ago. I
remember
the 656, yeah.
And that's still the all-time record. It was a Mega Million jackpot, but the games are very similar, obviously.
So people don't get in line for 50 million, 75 million. When the billboard, you're on the road and the billboard says, hey, Powerball jackpot, 45 million. They just don't get excited.
You know, it's one of those things that just frustrates lottery marketers. I'm like, what? 50 million isn't enough for you?
It's not going to change my life. Not going to change my life, boy.
You know, I was having this chat with one of my brothers-in-law. He said, well, you know, I don't play until it gets to 80 million. I said, well, where did you come up with that number? He said, well, and he went through this whole list of all the people that he'd have to give money to, and he decided he really didn't want to win unless it was at least 80 million.
You know, I like that method, actually. You can think that out a little bit and say, okay, I'm not going to play unless it's X, you know, and do the calculation, figure out what you would owe everybody, who'd be hitting on you for money, right? This has been great. Thanks for being here, Gordon.
Oh, my pleasure.
It was nice to meet you. Gordon Medenica, who was appointed director of the State Lottery and Gaming Control Agency in May by Governor Hogan, has been our guest in this hour of the show. We hope you enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And please have some lunch. We have lunch delivered today from Eddie's of Roland Park. Eddie's of Roland Park offering gourmet sandwiches, soups, salads, and dessert at its two locations, two stores, one on Roland Avenue and the other on North Charles Street, right there in Charles Village. Personal shopping, catering, and gift baskets are available at eddiesofrolandpark.com. Am I right? No, it's the Eddie's. Eddie's on Charles Street. No, Eddie's on Charles Street is way up there in Charles Street. That Eddie's, yeah. Yeah, not the one in Charles Village. So up anyway, we got the news coming up, and then the second hour of midday. Please stay tuned.